Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, welcome to another Rahalastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, the brilliant Bridget Christie. Do buy a book. It's fantastic. You'll hear a lot about that in this podcast. So, we are doing a Kickstarter campaign to video Series 8 of Rahalastapa, Rahalastapa, which is going to start filming on, well, we're going to start recording, at least, on the 27th of September. You can come along and see these shows at the Leicester Square Theatre. They're at 4 p.m. on Sundays for 10 weeks, from the 27th of September to the 29th of November. Go to the Leicester Square Theatre's website to buy those. You might want to buy for the first 2 weeks in November. That's just a little hint for you. I've not revealed any of the guests yet, but the 1st and the 8th of November. I think they're looking quite good, those two, at the moment. If you want to help us film the shows and you listen to them, and then we will carry on doing them for free as audios, so this may not concern you. We're doing a Kickstarter campaign. As I record this, we're about halfway there with just over a week to go. By the time you listen to this, there'll be about a week to go. I think we'll need to raise about £20,000 in the last week. That is my guess, which will be tricky. But 150,000 of you listen to this. There will be 100 episodes of this podcast by the time we get to the end of the 8 series. If you've never donated anything and you think those podcasts were worth 10p each, could you give us £10? If they were 20p each, could you give us £20? You don't have to give anything. I really want to keep it free, especially for people who can't afford to pay for it. If you can afford to give a little bit, if you feel slightly guilty that you've listened to so much fine entertainment for so little money, then go to kickstarter.com, search for RHLSTP and make a donation. There's some actual cool rewards there. You can get photocopier of my latest Lannister notebook with all my emergency questions and see the questions I didn't ask. You can get a DVD of me interviewing myself, plus backstage interviews from Series 7 that you don't see unless you're a badge subscriber. There's over an hour of extra interviews there with all of the guests from Series 7. There's mugs, there's t-shirts, you can get your name read out in the show, you can actually get to ask an emergency question, or you can sponsor an entire show and get like this little section of the podcast for me to advertise you, your company, your podcast, whatever you want to do. Preferably tiny little businesses is our preference rather than big multi cultural conglomerates, can't think of the words, multinational conglomerates. But if you are from one of those things that I can't say, then, because I'm so down with the kids, I don't even know what you are, then you get in touch with me and see. You could sponsor the whole series if you wanted. I mean, it's only £50,000 to make 20 episodes. I think that's probably quite cheap in terms of advertising for you. But anyway, we'd prefer to do it with you all giving a little bit. So go to kickstarter.com, search for RHLSTP, and if you want to, and you can help us make an 8th series of this podcast in video format. I think you'll agree, season 7 has been pretty strong, and there are some really great ones still to come. Limmy's coming up, and I know you're all very excited about that, but that is won't be out for a few weeks now, maybe towards the end of September. And also, remember, I am at the Leicester Square Theatre doing my 12 shows of Richard Herring. There are only 4 to go. I'm doing What Is Love Anyway on Friday, and the 4th of September, and We're All Going to Die on Saturday, the 5th of September. Lord of the Dance Settee on 11-9, as I like to call it. And Happy Now, my new show, on the 12th of September. That one is the only one that's very close to selling out. If you want to come to that, book ahead. I'd love to see more of you. Thanks to everyone who's come to see them. It's been a really fantastic, fun and interesting and terrifying run. If you want a chance to see those, do come along to the Leicester Square Theatre. Check out leicestersquaretheatre.com. That was also good for the tickets for Rahulastapa. And if you want to hear the audios of the first 10 of those shows, go to gofasterstripe.com, where you can buy 15 hours of comedy for about 12 quid, which isn't too bad. Anyway, I know you skipped through this by now. It will really have annoyed some of you. Here is Bridget Christie and Rahulastapa. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who turned 48 yesterday and drank more than a 48-year-old man should, as you will discover when you see him trying to speak. It's Richard Herring! Yeah. Oh, yeah! I'm still young. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. This is Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But recently I've noticed some kids out on the street, like some kids skateboarding out on the street. So when they're listening to it, they start calling it Rahulastapa, which a lot of people have picked that up from the kids. That's what the kids on the street are calling it. It's my birthday yesterday. I turned 48 years old, which I was sort of thinking, I've been 12 4 times, which I thought that's all right. Then my brother said, you've been 16 3 times. And I found that really depressing for some reason, that I'm now entering my 4th go at being 16. That's about as far as I've ever managed to get up to 16. It's 48, it's sort of depressingly old. I've got nothing more to say than that, except I wish I was 40 again. I did a show called Oh Fuck, I'm 40, which you can see if you come along to the Leicester Square Theatre at some point in August. But 48, fucking hell. There's no way back. That's the terrible thing, whatever Matthew Perry tells you in that film. Quite an obscure reference. Well done. And I've been in Amsterdam all week with my family. It's been lovely to go away with my family, my daughter and my wife. We didn't go to the red light district. I've never been to the red light district. We went to the Van Gogh Museum. Van Gogh, of course, he thought the best way to get a woman who he fancied to fancy him back, his idea was to cut off one of his ears and send that to her in the post. Now, most women will prefer flowers or chocolates or a homemade spice rack, but for 1 in 1,000 women, the surprise severed ear arriving by mail is the key to their knickers. They're going to open that up, go, I can't believe it, I've always wanted one of those. I'm definitely going to shag whoever sent me this. He shouldn't be difficult to find. Do be careful, though, fellas. It's really a technique you can only use twice, so do use it sparingly. To be honest, you're going to use it once, because the second time you do it, the woman's going to go, you've done this before, haven't you? This is your regular chat-up line. Not falling for that like that other ear slag. So that's one of the jokes I did in Amsterdam. That's an old joke of mine. We were staying in a flat. It was a lovely, beautiful flat. But this is the first time I've been away with my tiny daughter. And the staircases in Amsterdam are ridiculous. I mean, I think, Anne Frank stayed hidden for so long just because the Nazis thought, well, they're not going up those stairs. I genuinely do think that is true. I would try to get my suitcase up these stairs, and I got it. There were 70 steps, and they were like that. It was basically a ladder, just with the bits filled in.
And I got, and then it curves at the top. And I got, and I hurt my back already. And I got to about step 58, started to curve. And then I realised I couldn't lift my suitcase. And I was sort of just lying on the stairs, thinking I'm going to die or I'm going to drop my suitcase and kill my wife. It was nice. But on the last day, it was the day before my birthday, as I walked to the gig, this massive procession of people in horse-drawn carriages from all the ages, dressed in old costume, old-style costumes, went by. And I don't know why they were doing it. There were literally at least 100 horse-drawn carriages. And I like to think it was for me, in celebration of my birthday. So don't tell me if it wasn't. If it was some, probably, if it's Amsterdam, some racist thing. There's probably, at the end, there's a men blacked up going, oh! No, it's not racist. It's the Dutch tradition. They've generally got something. It's called Black David or Black Peter or something. Black Peter. Not as good as Blue Peter. Anyway, let's move on. Let's move on. My first guest this week, and only guest, of course, this week, because it is this week. I hope I'm not still hungover next week. That's how much I drank. She is probably best known. You'll have seen her, and this is why you are here, because she was on the new, all-new Celebrity Squares. That's what we're most interested in talking to you about. Will you please welcome Bridget Christie, ladies and gentlemen? Bridget Christie! Please sit down. Hello.
I forgot I did that.
You forgot you did it?
I forgot I did it.
I didn't see you. I did see one.
I haven't seen it.
I saw one of them the other day. I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was quite a good, fun, postmodern nonsense.
Was it postmodern?
Well, because it's kind of like, you're too young to remember.
I don't think they're trying to be.
They are, but they can be accidentally postmodern. I remember original Celebrity Squares from the 70s when you'd be too young to remember that.
I shouldn't think so.
And it was, you know, that was all the old celebrities, Roy, Rudd, Hull and Emu.
And they had jumpers on and stuff, didn't they? No, and I remember that.
Now to see it with people like Sarah Pascoe, I think it's quite amusing, them pretending to read out the answers. Well, you were on it. Do you not remember anything about it?
I remember getting there and leaving and having a laugh with Stuart Francis.
Oh, yes.
And Reese Shearsmith. Actually, it was quite funny because Warren, is that the host?
Warwick,
yeah.
He lives in a Warren. That's why you've got confused.
And then he said, what is the worst heckle? What, you know, someone shouts out, oh, you know, you're shit, you know, what do you say? I was sat really high up, like as I was up on all this scaffolding next to Andy Peters. It was just, it wasn't really a conversation I said, well, it depends what they say, and then I'll think about what they say, and then, I don't know, it's just always different. I don't think that was the answer. I think he was expecting me to say, you know, something like, oh, be quiet, mum, or something like that. But I can remember quite a lot about
it.
Remember every second. No.
Well, we're not really here to perhaps hit. I'd like to talk about Celebrity Squares a bit more, but we'll talk about some other stuff. I've been reading your book. I Am a Man, but I still read it.
It's not a joke about men, the title. It's about gendered products.
Okay. I've read it on my copy. I just wrote ring after the her, and I'm allowed to read it. It's a slow burn for people who can spell. So, Michael McIntyre was the first person to say to me... Do you know your name could be Dick Her Ring? He didn't achieve such success as he did with the man draw material as he did with that one. But it made me laugh, because I thought I'd heard every joke about my own name and thought of every rude joke about my own name. But I'd never thought
of that.
Did you
feel disappointed? Or
I felt excited. Felt excited and aroused. But it's a really brilliant book.
Thank you.
Really good. And it's... but it sort of gives false hope to all comedians out there because it takes us through your journey as a comedian, in sort of 10 years of working very hard.
12. Why does it give them
I'd say 10 works working right. hard.
Oh, yeah.
And
actually, no, probably about 3.
Because it makes you think that it's possible to become a very successful award-winning comedian after all that work, because you've done it. So it gives false hope to all the other comedians who'll do that and then won't become award-winning successful comedians.
What?
My book gives them the correct idea of what I worked for 25 years and pretty much nothing happened. Then I just said, oh, I'll just do my own show and film it and pretend it's on TV.
But you...
That is an accurate representation of what a comedian's journey is. But yours...
It's not. There isn't a route, though, is there? There isn't a thing that you can do that will make you. I mean, I wouldn't consider myself. This didn't sell out, did it? So, no. What I'm saying is, it's not. It's how you. You know, what do you want to do? I mean, it wasn't a deliberate thing. I wasn't. I wouldn't say I was necessarily ambitious or wanted to be.
No, I don't think you were. But that's sort of, in all seriousness, it's a really exciting. I think as a comedian, it's a really exciting book to read because I've followed your career anyway, pretty much nearly from I've seen most of your Edinburgh shows. I don't think I saw the first one or two.
The cheese roll.
I'm not sure if I saw the cheese roll. I think I would remember if I had seen the cheese roll. I think the Charles.
Not many people saw it, actually.
I think the Charles II one was the first one I saw, but I have a feeling of remembering something about cheese roll, so maybe I saw that as well. But, you know, you've really stuck to doing what you want to do, and a lot of it's crazy, but it was always kind of enjoyable, but it wasn't... You certainly weren't marketing yourself towards winning the big comedy award in Edinburgh at any point, I don't think.
What, by talking about... No, I mean, not in any way whatsoever.
You've done always what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
However unusual that might be.
Well, I didn't think it was unusual.
Exactly.
I mean, I've written about things that is interesting to me. So in 2005, cheese rolls were really interesting. So I wrote about...
Yeah.
Actually, it wasn't about the cheese rolls that you eat. It was about the pagan ritual.
Yeah,
that happens in Gloucester. So someone went, ooh. Probably a vegan. Ooh, bloody cheese-loving idiot.
Don't eat any of the cheese, so it's fine. Roll the cheese, so you don't... Well, I suppose whoever wins it...
You roll the cheese, but the people for the ethical treatment of animals tried to ban it.
That isn't true, is it?
I just got to
that bit in the book. That can't be true.
It is true. Because it was not ethical that it was the product of an animal. They wanted a soya-based cheese. It was shut down by health and safety in the council, but... Gloucester people are not going to be stopped by the council by rolling cheese.
Well, it's sort of down a cliff, isn't it? I mean, it's a very steep hill.
It's got a gradient of 1 in 1, which is like a cliff.
It's like
the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life.
And so people chase the cheese, and whoever beats the cheese, is it to beat the cheese or catch the cheese?
You can't beat the cheese, Rich.
One day there will be someone
who honestly can. Think that a human being can beat up hurling 7 pounds?
Because I know about gravity.
What if they're in a light aircraft or something?
Objects fall at the same pace, whatever size or mass they are. So, ask David Frew, he'll tell you.
Yeah, but
only in a vacuum. You're right. Is it a vacuum? Which?
It's not.
I mean, technically, Gloucester counts as a vacuum. I say this as coming from another West Country town where cheese is quite important. I think I'm allowed to mock Gloucester and Gloucester cheese.
Who do
you
think wins the cheese, me or you?
Well, I mean, cheddar cheese is the best cheese in the world.
Yeah, but what do you do with it?
We sometimes keep it in a cave.
That's...
People come and look at it.
It's not as good as...
It's not as exciting. And we have hills. I mean, we never thought to throw... We've got the Cheddar Gorge. We could have thrown cheese off the Cheddar Gorge.
I think we're better than...
Yeah. Well, I'm amazed no one in Cheddar thought of that. And then saying, why don't some people chase after... Throw that off the lion's head. It doesn't really look like a lion's head in Cheddar Gorge. And then jump after... Whoever can jump after it and catch
gets, it... And they haven't updated the prize either. So it's like... Like for thousands of years or whatever, so now you still get someone's wife or cow or... You don't really. It's £3, I think. It is amazing, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely...
I can't believe the show didn't win the Perrier.
It is one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire life. Not like in a cruel way, but it is funny seeing people hurl through the air.
Is there a People for the Ethical Treatment of People organisation? Because surely they should be getting... It's not so much the cheese, it's the people who are... Do people really get badly injured doing it?
Yeah, really badly. I mean...
Do people die?
Only once.
But they still carried on after that. That's what,
yeah,
it was only once.
He won, but they buried him with his cheese. Oh, so that's not a very nice thing to say. He did his neck in, I think. But it's normally just broken limbs and stuff.
Yeah.
Because people get really rat-ass before they do it.
Yeah.
And there's separate races as well for, you know...
I hope it's for men and women and not... They're separate races for separate races. I think there's a kind of Gloucester...
Yeah, there's like Gloucester people, and then there's everyone else. Yeah. No, it's. You should really go and see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. People come from all over the world, actually.
Peter also, and I went to the protest once. Protest against the Pamplona running of the Bulls, which makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because it's horrific, but it's like they seem to not like it, any event where people can really badly hurt themselves trying to have fun. That seems to be the linking thing.
Have you watched all the videos of the?
The actual Pamplona. Yeah, I didn't. I generally, having got, as I went to the protest, which was running naked through the. I did it. I didn't care. I did it for a show. I'm not that bothered.
I think you probably do it anyway. Do
not well, we weren't allowed to run naked in the end. They don't mind. Yeah, we had to wear pants. It was when I was doing 12 Tasks of Hercules Terrors available. We'll be doing that here in August. Too late for people at home. Instead of doing a bull-based thing, I was going to run with the bulls. In fact, my friend Stuart Lee suggested I run with the bulls, which made me think that maybe he didn't like me that much after all.
Can I just... Did you not bring my book? Should I have brought my book?
You should have brought your book. I've only got it on the Kindle because you said you'd send me a copy and then you didn't send me one. So I had to buy it myself. And I can't just bring a Kindle out here, come and go. That is that's what one of the pages
they
look
know
like.
Anyway, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
Or you can. This is also Talking Cock. You can buy this book, which is also it's a feminist exploration of the human penis.
Oh, I'll have to look out for that.
There's actually loads of good stuff in there you'll enjoy about how early gods were all female based.
Oh! Someone's got. Hey, thanks for buying it. Oh, are you the vegan? There it is. Oh, I feel really bad now. I'll give it back.
Sell
it to someone else. No, all right. Oh, what if he's written in it? Oh, this bit's shit. look, there's loads of yawns in that bit. No.
Doesn't look like he's read it yet. He's going to get.
No, it looks nice.
You ready? What is the? Ask a question.
What happens at the end?
Well, no, there's lots of things in the book that make me, and I haven't got to the end yet.
I'm that's all right.
65% of the way through because I'm reading on a Kindle rather than book form. there's lots of things that beg more questions that you may answer later in the book. But for example, you were sacked from being a milkmaid. Is that true? That's a throwaway comment in the book. That is a book. Is that have you saved that for another book?
Okay.
Is it a lie?
No, I left.
Right.
Right, okay. It was kind of a mutual agreement. What happened was, when I was... So I left school really young and lied about my age and got a job in it for the local newspaper.
Yeah.
But the editor was a real twat. So I left and I thought, I'd like to work with animals and stuff. So I got a job on a farm. And part of my job there was... milking the cows, so I wasn't like a maid.
You didn't have like the thing over your shoulders
and
the
I mean I did do that to my hair, but it was really traumatic, and I've never been so stressed in my entire life.
Why was it traumatic?
Well, okay, so for example, my tasks for the first hour was to... So it started at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
First job was to get a newborn calf out of a pen.
right.
And into a cage on the back of a tractor. I don't know if you've ever tried to handle a newly born calf.
No.
No.
Well, I've never tried to put it in a cage.
Well, I've never even seen one before. Right. Anyway, because they're really slippery and yeah. everything. I think I was sort of, by about 12 o'clock, I was just sort of crying. And I noticed that Richard, the farmer, and his wife were just doubled over laughing at me through their kitchen window. I think they had the kitchen built in a certain way so that they could see all the new young people who thought that there was more to life than working in an office and just watch them all day. I fed... So I didn't get the calf in, and the calf was really traumatised as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even know how to open the cage. Even if I had managed to get a handle...
They just say, go out and do that. They didn't say, we'll show you how to do
he
that.
He didn't tell me, get the back bit or the head or I don't know.
Wipe it down with a towel first to get rid of it.
So that it wasn't as slippery.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, nothing. Just get that in there, see ya. I'm off for my bacon. Oh. Then I fed the other cows gravel. Because they said, there's their feed, if you feed them. But there was loads of sacks of different stuff all in a row. And it looks the same. You're laughing, but it really wasn't funny. And then he said, this was all in... So it was shift work, right? Because you've got to get up with the cattle and you have to work around them, basically. So I started at 6, then worked until, 12 or 1 or something, and then I had to come back at 6 to get them in from the... walk them home from the fields and that. And, he said, so I've got... I'm scared of heights as well. So then after I didn't get the calf in and fed the adult... You can edit this, can't you? gravel. Then he said, see that those hay bales up there? If you could just get them down... Get them down. Get those... And I was really small when I was 15. I was quite slight and small.
Yeah.
And so I had to climb up this ladder and get these hay bales that were really huge and heavy and had, string around them that really cut into your hands and get them down. I didn't get any of them down. So I was just sort of up there crying. I'm scared of heights. It was an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
Then one of the cows, because they, in the olden days, it was still kind of mechanic, but you have to clean their udders first with your hand, and then you put the pumps on them. And apparently cows know if you're new. And so I was cleaning it, going, oh, God. I think I'll just go back to typing. Anyway, and then you stand in it's like a sort of a swimming pool with no water on it, so you're level with their feet.
Right.
And so because they knew that I hadn't done it before, they just sort of, pissed and shat all over me. And then Richard, the farmer, he was like, I'll hose you, I'll hose you down. It sounds funny now, right? But so I had to stand there in this courtyard in my overalls. And, it sort of gets everywhere, really. So I'd failed to do any of the things.
Yeah.
And I was covered in shit and piss. And a farmer who I had only just met was hosing me down, and it was like cold water as well. And then, because I used to ride my motorbike there, and then I said, all right, see you in the morning. And on my way home, my tyre blew out on my motorbike, and I managed to keep it. I didn't have a really bad smash. And it was out in the, if you think, rural Gloucester in the sort of mid-80s was... Well, it's quite an interesting place. Anyway, I had to knock on this... I knocked on this farmhouse to see if I could borrow their... use their phone.
Yeah.
It was literally like Royston Bays. I mean, it was... It was... I was like, oh, can I? I've had an accident. Can I use your phone? Phone? Well, I haven't got a phone, but you can come in. I'd forgotten about all of that.
Were you still covered in cow piss and shit at this
no,
point?
No, but okay. My dad said that it was not pleasant to live with me for those 2 days because I was really...
That wasn't worth putting in the book, all that?
No, of course no. not. Look at the silence. It's...
It's amazing.
It's not part of the... It's not moving anything forward, is it, that story?
I think it's very... It tells us a lot about you. And there's lots of things. The thing that I think about... I interviewed Russell Brand.
Did you?
Yeah, this show.
Oh, here.
And then just when you were talking just then, it reminded me... You really look like Russell Brand.
I know.
There's something like really.
I know.
He looked at me, and I went and I thought it's. And I thought, oh no. It's
These are the people who, right? Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, Russell Brand. what's that woman who used to sing in those musicals?
Might have to narrow it down a bit.
She was. I think she.
Sarah Brightman.
Yeah.
Oh, Sarah Brightman. Sarah Brightman.
Who else? Lots of people,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, you could do, you could do, like, characters of, like, a sort of...
Of men, I've done that already.
A Beau Selector program where you do... You could do a female Beau Selector. Ho Selector, it could be called.
Yeah. Yeah, could do that, yeah. Or I couldn't do that, yeah.
You once tried to buy a cave?
Well... I was shut down quite early on. There was a cave for sale in Hereford.
Right.
But it didn't have any service, electricity or water.
No,
or
due to it being a cave.
Yeah, but you could put some in, presumably. But it was amazing, and I did want to buy it. I think it was about 35,000, no, 40,000 pounds or
that
something.
Sounds all right.
Yeah, I didn't, it's not practical, really, with children. I mean, I know it was once, but they didn't have any choice.
Are you planning to use that as your main habitation? Or just, it's nice to own a cave you could go and look at.
Probably have it as like a weekend retreat. No. Yeah. Ooh, those Londoners coming down, ruining our cave community.
And you were mugged?
Yeah, I was mugged, yeah. God, you picked really weird things to talk about.
They're all things that you don't elaborate on.
Talk about my personal life very much.
Okay.
Really.
I don't think
that it's very interesting, but...
It is very interesting. I think these are interesting things that you just kind of skate over and say, oh, it's actually the milkmaid.
Oh, yeah. Well, isn't that everyone gets mugged, don't they? Well, I had £5 in my pocket.
Yeah.
And it was in Brixton. And I was really poor at the time, so I didn't want to give him my £5. But I wish I had, because he knocked my front teeth out.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And they ended up costing a lot more than £5 to sort out. But it didn't really bother me. In fact, I ran into my local pub. It was 5 o'clock in the afternoon, like no one stopped. I was like, I'm obviously not with this man. It's not a... anyway, it's weird how people won't get involved or everything. He hit him. Do you know, he hit me so hard, it's hilarious. I spun round, yes. Did like a pirouette.
Yeah.
I didn't know what a nerve looked like. Does anyone know what a nerve looks like? Anyway, and I went into this pub and I went, oh, what are those little dots? Ah! A nerve is like a tiny little line with a sort of a dot on the end.
Right.
So they were...
Dear.
Having a look around.
Wish I hadn't asked you that now. I feel it. I'm a bit shaky from the hangover as it is. I had to hold on to the chair there for a second.
This is interesting, is that since I've had children, I've always found it really hard to walk away from trouble, like I'll face it.
Yeah.
Like when I was in New York once, I was on the subway and there was a proper gang, like... hooded, kind of really on a lot of stuff, and the train was packed. And one of them spat on me, and I went, oh, I think that's yours. And my boyfriend at the time said to me, if you ever do anything like that again, because they would have killed me first. I was like, why would they have killed you for... Anyway, I didn't think about it, right? And then the train got stuck in a tunnel. And I was like, oh, okay. So there was a moment, right, where he looked at me and I looked at him. And the whole lot of them looked at me. And I thought, this might be it, or this might be really bad. And all his friends started laughing and said, she got you, ah, ha, ha, like that. And then I thought, he's lost status, so he's going to have to get his status back. So he's going to now have to do something much worse. But he started laughing as well. And then nice. They said to me, you're all right, and went like that. And then I got off and fainted.
I almost wish I hadn't spat on you now. You're an okay...
No, but I won't. You have to... The thing is like, if you're... I mean, I've been attacked quite a lot in my life from, like... I have been, but it's like, say it's like I'm from Gloucester. If you felt... I've got a massive lump here where I was bottled in Gloucester. Well, it's just not a big deal, really. Anyway, I always think that you make decisions, don't you? Split second, like every scenario is different and you have to just do what you think is right at that time. And sometimes facing up to it is the right thing and sometimes it isn't the right thing. But now with children, I do... If there's something that I don't need to get involved in, yeah, I won't get involved in it. But I find it hard to not... I find it hard to...
But that's almost like, I mean, it's slightly self-destructive, but it's like a comedic instinct of doing the thing you're not meant to do. And that's as a comedian, there's an element of that. And you act in a way that other people wouldn't act. That's how comedy works, I suppose, is that you are thinking thoughts that hopefully the audience wouldn't immediately leap to. Otherwise, it doesn't work for all comedians. Some comedian's job is to tell the audience the things that they might have forgotten,
but they
haven't actually forgotten. That's quite a successful
stand-up. What is comedy, Rich?
There's all sorts of different types.
It's all different.
There is different ones. The easiest one is just reminding people of things they think they've forgotten but haven't forgotten. That is the... I'm very good at reminding people of things they've forgotten. That doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
Because they don't remember it because they've forgotten it.
I forget things as well.
What's great about the book, as the starting point, there's lots of great things. It is genuinely, I think everyone has to read this book. It's just, it's fantastic. Because for lots of reasons, I think this is, it is a personal journey as well as being, you know, about anti-sex. I mean, I think the starting point of it, the way you've started, and the epiphany and the road to Damascus element that you've chosen to claim as the change in your fortunes and your career or understanding who you are as a comedian is a man farting in a feminist
wasn't like, obviously it'd been, a lot of things had happened before the fart. That was just the thing that was like, that was also funny. None of the other things were funny.
No.
But this was a thing that made me angry and amused me.
So a man in a bookshop had pretended he didn't have any feminist books.
Oh, it was really weird. I mean, you know, I've talked about this fart at length now, so at some point I will have to move on from it. But in case,
I think it's important in terms of
it
this
is
book.
Important. Yeah, but there
and
was a
and understanding who you are.
Yeah, well, there was a there was a particular day.
Yeah.
Where three things had already happened on that day, and they were all involving women, and they were all, you know, quite depressing things. And then in the afternoon, I wanted to buy these three books. And I went to Waterstones. Yeah. But I went to a bookshop.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. They won't be watching. And so the guy was really obstructive, like everything. Like he was immediately unhelpful and annoyed that I was that I was there. It just didn't want to do his job. Probably like that with everybody. But it was sort of one of those. Do you ever sometimes in life, you know, if you're speaking to, I don't know, the gas board or your phone people, is you think that if you weren't a writer, you would sort of just want to leave society. Like, there are things that are so frustrating and confusing and needn't be to do with the admin of life.
You say in your book, I picked it out, I love this thing, that if you know, the deferred creative revenge on tedious admin of life is what, you know, how people who don't have that
I don't know how they survive. It's Michael Douglas in that film, isn't it?
It is.
But yeah, I was dealing with this man, thinking, well, I obviously have to do something, write something about this. But yeah, it was like everything's no. I've never heard of Virginia Woolf. Like, he couldn't spell anything, and then he hadn't heard of Virginia Woolf, and then he said that he didn't have a book, which was in a massive display in the window. Like, I was like, but you've got, I'll just go and get one from the window. He's like, no, don't do that, because you'll knock all the cardboard over and stuff like that. And I said, well, I'll go and have a look myself. Is there a gender studies section, or I don't know, whatever you call it, keeps changing its name, that section. Now it's called the women's shit section. Anyway. And he sent me off upstairs, and I got upstairs, and it wasn't upstairs. And a girl said, no, it's downstairs in the corner by the opposite the toilet. And as I was on my way downstairs, yes, it literally is that, wasn't it? On my way downstairs, he was in the women's studies section. And he saw me, and I looked at him, and I was like, you've sent me up here. Why have you sent me here? And when I got there, it really fucking stank. And I was like, oh, yeah, and he saw me, and then he sort of walked off. So that was really weird. He sort of saw me and went, oh, and, like, walked off really quickly. And I thought, right. So it was him, because there's nobody else. So he did that fart. So that means that either that's what he thinks of feminism, or he didn't even know he was in the women's, which is probably even worse. Or he thought, where is the least populated area of the bookshop? Where can I go to do all of my day's farts without fear of any feminists or anyone turning up? I'll do it there. And then I turned up and got, three Edinburgh shows, two BBC Radio 4 series and a book out of it. So I suppose I should thank him, really.
Maybe he's an angel sent from heaven to,
the farting
to
angel.
Fart and make you...
Because you've got the weeping angels, haven't you? Maybe he's the farting angel.
That fart was meant to make you think, make you angry.
But it was... Yeah, I was there and I was genuinely cross and angry and confused as well. But also, you know, farts are funny. So then that was in 2012 and I did that show where I'd leave a man standing on stage... And I'd mocked up this sort of bookshop thing, and I'd get a man from the audience, and he would have to stand there. And I played in three farts on a loop, and they were proper. They did sound like, you know, sometimes sound effects don't sound. They did sound like farts. So everyone would leave the end of the show in silence to this man, and with just the three sound cues. And it was quite funny in big rooms, because if like a few hundred people had to get out, like in silence, he'd have to stand there for about 10-15 minutes. And they'd always stand there, really. They'd never go, oh, can I go yet? They'd always stand there really, really politely. And, so that was the fart. But then I thought, I wonder if I could write about other things.
Yeah. Starting from that. But I think it's the interesting journey, because you were doing
But nothing was... I say I thought, oh, that fart was funny, but it was kind of about feminism as well and stuff like that, but I wasn't trying to write a show that I thought would do well, if you know what I mean. I had nothing to lose at that point. Like, nobody was coming anyway.
I think that's sort of what's, I mean, it is interesting, like, from a comedic point of view, A, that you were very prop based and costume based, which I love, but you know, as a comedian it gets annoying, especially if you have
to. It was hard to tour.
Yeah, if you have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Just, you know, any of those accoutrements. But also it's you're slightly hiding by you're characters like the Great Fire of London and you know, Samuel Pitt. You just did crazy characters and they were brilliant. I love those early shows. And you're slightly down on them in the book, but I think they were great. And I really love the Daily Mail show, which was a different thing altogether.
Yeah, that was
as well.
A different thing. Yeah.
But I think like that, realizing that you didn't necessarily need all the costumes. I mean, you want the radio, and you couldn't use the costumes.
Couldn't, yeah.
So that, getting rid of that, and then becoming sort of yourself, and finding the thing that, you know, even though it was coming from just like the Great Friar of London talking to everyone, this thing had come from you and was your very personal thing. I don't know. It's sort of, you do sort of talk about this, but I mean, I think. It's about it's the realization, which is very true, that sexism is just inherently ridiculous.
But yeah, it's absurd. I mean, if you thought about it for a second.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah.
You would just...
And sexist people are very, you know, so it's in similar eyes, sort of fact. I mean, other people have realised these things. And I think we all know, you know, most people would know that sexism is ridiculous. But I think when you realise as a comedian how ridiculous it is, then this whole world opens up, because you don't... It's not about making feminism funny or not funny, because feminism, in a lot of ways, is quite a serious subject. But to realise that the key to it, I think, is to mock...
Yeah.
Sexism, which sort of does its own job, but if you find the right way of doing it, you know what I mean? And that was sort of the key.
But subject matter doesn't make something funny. No. I mean, you could, and I will apply the same stuff to other things as I did with feminism. So if I wanted to talk about, you know, I don't know, toasters or something,
yeah,
you would think that people wanted to see the way that I did something rather than they were coming to see something because they were interested in the subject matter.
Of course, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think so, just that, I mean, the minute you sort of found that avenue and the way to do it, I just think, you know, it sort of transformed what you were doing.
Yeah.
And... I don't know, it's really interesting because it's just, you sort of, I don't know, it's kind of hard to put into words because, you know, I'm a man. but you know, it's allowing those people to mock. So I always try to come up with a great, I'd like to be a modern artist, really. And I like to come up with modern art things. And one of the ideas I have, but sort of a similar thing, is to now just do very fine portraits of everyone who is a global warming denier, and build a lovely gallery and own it for 1,000 years, and have those portraits up there and put global warming deniers above it, and they would love it because they get a picture of themselves. But then, if in 100 years' time things, you know, the world's underwater, that's artistically that becomes a different gallery, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I mean, you could do the same with people on Twitter who who attack women for wanting to have one woman on a pound note or something. It's, you know, those people, the sexist attitude of someone... I mean, saying women aren't funny, you kind of... When a man says that, I kind of think, do you know any women? That's the... Have you ever met a woman? Because how have you lived your life and not... found one funny woman? That sort of suggests to me that you have never managed to successfully talk to a woman.
I know, but when you talk about this, I mean, I refuse to talk about this now, but I will because it's you. But it's like you're saying, you know, sexism is absurd, you know, racism is absurd, transphobia is absurd. All these things are absurd. They don't bear up to, you know, if you... It's very hard to argue against... If you try and have an argument against someone who says a feminist... You know, it's basically you're trying to argue against logic, fact, reason, and common sense. So it's really hard for people to win an argument like that. And they just sort of tie themselves up in knots. It's really funny. I had one, actually, where this guy... He's a nice guy, but he said, oh... You know, I know it's not you and everything, but, you know, I've moved and we've moved to quite a small place, and there's the guys go out on a Thursday, but, you know, it's like a curry night on a Thursday, and you know, for the guys in the village. But you know, because of feminism, like I can't. Well, you know, my wife wants to go because we've just moved there, and so she doesn't want me, you know, to go out on a Thursday, and so she wants to come, and so. Because of feminism, I can't go out on a Thursday. I'm like, you're fucking joking. It's like, he's like, yeah, you know, so that's what it's done, hasn't it? I'm like, oh, I don't really quite know where to start. But yeah, it's, people are just sort of threatened, I think, by it. It's not that, they haven't really thought it through. If somebody says women aren't funny, they don't mean that women aren't funny. What they mean is, it's an affront for a woman to stand up in a room of people and to think that they... Because it's a high-status thing to do. I mean, Mary Beard's brilliant about this. She said that she puts it in a historical context. So rather than it being misogyny, she says we're just not used to seeing people, women speaking in public. And it's not just female comedians, it's politicians or whoever. Where they're like, they're still an anomaly. It's like they're a kind of freak of nature or a, they pose some kind of threat. It's like, who do you think you are to stand up there with your words that we invented? And it's probably one of us, actually. Anyway,
but so... I think by coming to... It's a very hard subject to get through to people, and I think like with feminism, the you know the knee-jerk reaction is guys going, oh, feminists doing this and that and sport. And so that's I think comedy, as with a lot of subjects, is a great way to open that up. Did you not? Because it means that if people are laughing at something, A, and it's ridiculous, A, if you believe that, you have to go, oh, people are laughing at me and I'm being ridiculous, but also it's just less... You know, it's more inclusive, I think. I think this is why fascism didn't want people taking the piss out of fascism, why Hitler didn't want people taking the piss out of fascism, because the minute you laugh at it, it kind of crumbles.
Yeah, well, actually, Leila Hussein, who's worked with a lot, she's an amazing, just the most incredible person I've ever met in my life, really, but she's an FGM survivor, campaigner and activist, and she said an absolutely amazing thing to me. We made a short film about... FGM, and she said, you know, the reason that she mocks FGM and its ideologies and the people who think that it's a good thing is because when you mock something, you lower its status. And she says, you know, it's a really important distinction to make that you obviously, no subject, she said, should be off limits, like at all. And, you know, by mocking something, you make it less important. So you're saying, I don't recognize something that you think is really great, and I'm going to mock you for it. And we should have that as a basic right that we should be able to do. But is, you know, I mean, if you're, I mean, we have nothing to lose, do we? We live in a democracy, we can say what we like.
Yeah.
You know, but there's lots of prisoners of conscience around the world who can't say what they like. Raif Badawi is being lashed in Saudi, you know, for saying things that he wants. So they've got a lot more to lose than we have. I think we're in this really weird period where we're in this kind of post-feminism and post-racism era where there's a lot of people, including UKIP, who think that there isn't kind of racism or sexism or misogyny anymore. And so why are you still... But like, he's always saying that we don't need the 1968 Race Relations Act and that it's fine for people. It's just banter, like racist jokes, misogynist jokes. It is, and the sort of the rights have hijacked freedom of speech, and they're kind of saying, well, I've got a right to say these things. But I think it's kind of like a waste. But also you can't... Because someone doesn't agree with you, that doesn't mean to say that they don't have their right as well, because it's everybody has it. But I think Voltaire is probably now... regretting saying, you know, his famous quote, everything that Katie Hopkins says appalls me and disgusts me, but I would die for her right to be able to say it. I think he's regretting saying that now. But, but yeah, I mean, it's just how you do things. I think we have an obligation as comedians.
Yeah, I do.
Not split communities and spread... I mean, I don't know, comedians can say... There's this idea, isn't it, that the left has got it all sewn up, comedy sewn up. It's absolute, complete nonsense myth.
Yeah.
And it's not. If you I mean, also, I think sometimes people think that, oh, she's, you know, fucking, God, yeah, she's preaching to the converted. Like, I really am not. It's like, I die a lot. And a lot of people don't want to hear it. But I think there's this idea that I'm sort of going around all these feminist lectures going, look at this pen. Like, it's not. It really does not. It's, you know.
No, I know, I know. I sort of think with these subjects, it's like on Twitter, the sort of shaming, if you read Ben Goldacre's book, but like that sort of shaming culture, and it seems to be sometimes people are more interested in kind of appealing to their friends and getting their approval of their friends than actually trying to win an argument or to try and, well, not to win an argument, you know, with feminism, it's about trying to make everyone see that everyone being equal is a good thing. It seems what odd that it's difficult to get that message through. But sometimes, you know, they're kind of, it can be just about who's the best at being a feminist, can't it?
No.
Yeah, I think, don't you think sometimes, I just feel with some people, like on Twitter, sometimes it's, well, and I'm, I am a feminist on, and they annoy me. So it's, you know, it's, that's what I'm
well, I'm not on social media. No, I find it, you know, it's, I know that it can be really brilliant, especially in countries that don't have, you know, democracies. But I think that it constricts people. I think it holds people back, basically. I'm not on social media, and so I might say, I'll write a show or say something or a piece of material, and I'm not affected by what happens when it gets out there.
Yeah.
And I think that if I was, I would be constantly self-editing all the time, and I don't think, as a writer, you should be like that. It's a very intimidating place, I think. I think it does shock. I mean, a lot of friends of mine have, you know, been really intimidated and move out from where they're living, and it's had a really incredibly negative impact on them. But I don't get involved. It's not that I don't want to interact or communicate with people. I mean, I do. Thanks for coming. But I don't know. I think that I think you have to do what you want to do. And let whatever happen, you know, don't get bogged down in how it's going to be received and what people are going to think about it. But it took me a long time to get to that point.
Yeah.
A long, long time. I mean, in stand-up, that only really happened to me in 2013, sort of liberated myself from the need to be liked or popular, because I wasn't anyway, so I had nothing to lose. And writing the book, I was kind of paralysed with fear about it, because a book is like a thing, like that exists now. In the way that a bad gig is gone, like it's a moment in time. It's between me and the audience, and that's over now. But a book is something that is on your shelf. And I actually had a moment where I thought, right, if it's shit, I can't burn them all. And so I kind of lost my nerve for a long time, and then I had to write it really fast.
Yeah.
Like in 3 months.
Well, it's kind of it's sort of, because it's really topical. Like if you read it now.
But that's because
it's like, did you write this last week? And
it's
like,
yeah, it's literally right up against I didn't think I was. Yeah. It was because I was worried about many different things. I was worried. There's been some brilliant women that I've met in the last few years, activists and campaigners, and really fantastic women. I felt a kind of responsibility to them. I felt a responsibility to comedy, and. I didn't know what it was. It took me a long time to find out who I was in the book. Like, why does this book exist? There's loads of brilliant books about feminism that people can go and read. I need to do something different with this. But once I realised that it had to be about how I wrote stand-up about feminism, then that was, it could be judged on its own terms, because that book wasn't out there. Like, there wasn't a book written by a stand-up that was about how they wrote about feminism.
No.
So then it was much easier for me.
Yeah.
Then I stopped worrying about, you know, what Julie Birchall might say about it, or Julie Bindle or Suzanne, but, you know, the people that I,
yeah.
or people that I, you know.
But then, you know, it does all the things that
those books would want to do, but it's also
I think it does,
and it's also really funny. So I think that's what I just think you're reading that and you're entertained.
Well, I just tried to make it as funny as I could,
yeah,
right, and anything else that's in it is kind of a sort of a bonus. But I thought that if you know you want people to keep turning the page over, you want them to read it quite quickly. Not oh god, I'm only on page 10. So I just thought I'd try to make it as funny as possible.
Yeah.
And then it would be judged as a humour book, not as, you know,
yeah,
anything more serious than that.
Yeah, but, you know, humour's important as well, so it is.
Yeah,
People would read that book who wouldn't necessarily see themselves as feminists or wouldn't necessarily, or might see themselves as anti-feminists and might come away from it.
I don't think they'll read it, because on the back it says... If you're interested in comedy and feminism, this is the book for you. If you hate both, then I'd probably give it a miss.
But if you only
so
hate one of them,
read
if
it.
You like comedy and you hate feminists, this is still the book for you. And you might,
or if you,
might
you hate come, comedians yeah. and love feminism,
that could also work. So, right, you got webbed feet. You do talk about it a bit, but that's amazing. You could do a whole show about that.
Well, it's not my whole foot.
Foot is incredible. That's like a duck.
It's a family thing. We've all got them. Most of us have got them.
Are they?
Yeah, it's a genetic. When my children were born, it's the first thing I looked at. Yeah, it's the second and third toes on the right foot.
Right.
There's lots of us. It's my brother, two sisters, my mum and my dad. No, there's my nieces. Yeah. It's like a thing. It's fine, though. You don't need to go on about it.
I want to go on about it. It's like a superpower.
Yeah,
if you have to get through a very tiny bit of water slightly quicker than someone else. I've got small hands, so, you know, I know what it's like. I've got like a girl's hands.
They're not webbed, though.
I know, but they're tiny, so I know what it's... And that is a superpower.
Does that make you swim less quicker, then?
No. I do an awful routine now. That I'm having to resurrect from my shows about how I use it to I lure paedophiles into a room and then I'm hiding behind a curtain and then I wank off the paedophiles putting on a little girl's voice and they think they've been wanked off by a 7-year-old girl because of their hands.
Yeah, but they're very hairy though.
Well, that's all right, I can shave. And then, but the joke's on them because I'm actually a 48-year-old man. So
the joke is
they haven't done anything. The police could come in, go, it's all right, you can get wanked off by a man. And also, I'm keeping those paedophiles off the streets, aren't I? So that is...
It's
a superpower. I'm doing something to... Because of what I'm doing, those paedophiles don't abuse any... What are you doing to stop paedophilia? Nothing.
Well,
I'm literally stopping it.
You can't really wank with two webcams, isn't it?
I'm not saying it has to be wank-based.
I don't normally say things like that. You've made me...
It's interesting, isn't it? That you got wet, and you were in a motorbike gang.
I was, yes.
That's interesting.
Is it?
You lived an amazing life. You left school at 14 or 15.
Well,
which is something that happens in like the 1930s.
Well, I didn't think it.
And how old are you?
Okay, so my birthday is in August, yeah. So I kind of left full time when I was four. I went back intermittently. I think I went back for a couple of exams. But I wasn't really there in the fifth year. It was in the fifth year back then. That was the last year of 1987, I think, or 85. The last year they did CSEs. Then the year after was GCSEs. Yeah, I did leave. I did not think that it had anything for me, really. And I just hated it. It was the worst... If someone had said to me, just try and get through this and then the rest will be fine, I really, really hated school, everything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just wanted to leave as quickly as possible. I knew that I can read and write, so that's good.
Okay.
But I didn't think that anything else. Yeah, just sort of.
Yeah, but it's fascinating. And then you're in a motorcycle gang. That's kind of unusual. Then you're a...
Yeah, but I wasn't, like, breaking the law. I was just, you know, I was just in a... But, I mean, I did know the local Hell's Angels. And I did go on holiday with them. But I did, to the Isle of Man. Well, it wasn't like a holiday. It was the TT races. But, yeah, we all went off. I was quite young, but I was very mature. In fact, they were all about sort of 30. And I was about 16, 17, I think. But they all really trusted... Like, I was the most sensible person. I think this is in the... I think I've put this in, actually. There was a... When we got there, right, they said, "Oh, Bridge, you're really sensible. You, this is the only key to the house, right? Do you remember this bit? So you, we're going out now for something to eat, so put the key in a really safe place, all right?" And I was like, yeah. So I hid it in my suitcase under my bed, and then we all went out. Right? And then at about 11, they said, "Oh, you know, Bridget's got the key." I was like, "I haven't got the key. The key's in a hidden in my room." They were like, "Sorry?" They said, "Oh, the key, the only key to the house." I said, "Well, you didn't tell me to like put it on my person. You just told me to put it in a safe place." Yeah, anyway, so and I rode my bike to France when I was 17 through the Swiss Alps. I was stuck in Wales in a blizzard. See, you think it's interesting, but nobody else does.
I do. It's fascinating. It's sort of, but I also think that with comedians, like a lot of comedians, especially now, have had quite a boring life of going to university and then becoming comedians, including myself.
So?
Yeah. Well, I think a bit unlike in the old days when I first started doing comedy. You would meet people who'd, you know, come off the docks and come from loads of different jobs.
I think comedy suffers for that. From not having a diverse...
Yeah, well, it needs that. So that's what I mean. It's kind of... Nowadays, it's less. It happens less.
Yeah,
that you would be... You know, you'd go away to, like, a festival or something with something, and you'd be... There'd be a guy in his 50s, and there'd be guys in their 20s, and some of them been accountants, and some of them had been, you know, built railways, and some of them had been mentally ill, and some of them had been circus performers.
I know. And Edinburgh's different as well.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I first started going 10 years ago, there would be really... eccentric people who lived on boats for the rest of it, and then they'd come up and you're seeing them less and less now.
Well, yeah, or they're kind of hidden away in weird places. Yeah,
yeah, and London is really unbelievably expensive, so that's pricing out a lot of people. I mean, my equivalent, me now, would not be able to come here and get a day job and live in a bedsit and do stand up at night. I just wouldn't be able to afford. I wouldn't have been able to go to drama school without maintenance grant, scholarship. Luck, all of that, all that's being stripped away now. Osborne's just got rid of the maintenance grants for students from low-income families. So, yeah, I mean, everything's going to suffer. The arts is going to suffer, but, you know, society's going to suffer. There's no joke, sorry. Let's talk about cocks again. No, but, yeah, it is. It's going to be a real loss, I think. Everything's going to be...
Yeah, but I sort of think with comedians, not all of them, because, you know... Some of them, like me, just go to Oxford University and then come out and have a charmed life. But of just endless success. But you know, I think that's to have lived a life and done those things so, you know, to know yourself so well that you can go and, you know, or even just rebel in that, even if it's a slight... It's kind of fascinating to me that you would do that so young. You'd leave school young while still obviously being academically bright... But you still.
I wasn't academically.
But you are. But
bright.
You are, though. I mean, that doesn't. None of that's. It's not like what exams you get. You're clearly a bright person.
But that's maybe socially and intellectually. But I mean, academically, I was not. I really struggled.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't. I would just shut down with anything to do with. I mean, I didn't even do maths. Like I was in remedial, you know, sort of arithmetic. Just couldn't really get my head around information and facts about any subject at all, really. No, but unless I was really interested in it, which I don't know.
Yeah.
But
then, like, getting a job in a newspaper at 15 and, you know, not liking it but going away and then Daily Mail, you know, you've still managed to get into all those places.
Yes, but it's not like I was going into brain surgery. I mean, these are jobs that anyone... You know, I mean, I just lied about my qualifications and I thought I would probably be able to do that job anyway. And I could. I mean, I wasn't going into pretending to be a doctor or a dentist or anything. I wouldn't have done that. And, you know, with acting and stand-up, you don't need to be good at anything, do you? It's just... just be able to, you know, pretend to be someone else or...
or an ant. Which you've been, you pretend to be an ant.
Which I will bring back at some point.
A ant. Good. Well, I mean, you're going to have to let you go in a sec,
which
is a shame, because there's loads to talk about. That's good. That's a good idea about that global warming guy, didn't I? And I'm going to do a sexist scale. It's going to cost a lot of money to do it, but I'm going to do it. So it's not as good as my one with all the shoes. That was a good one.
The shoes?
I thought, I'm going to do it with my daughter. I'm going to keep every pair of shoes my daughter ever wears, and then I'm going to make them into an art installation. Well, I'll be dead by the end, but I'll have to leave instructions to leave an art installation, which is just all the shoes she's had through her life in a row. Until the last shoe she wears. It's a brilliant piece of art. I should be an artist,
that's
really.
Because
I haven't talked about Stirling Moss and John Inverdale. That's fucking great. Asked you one emergency question. Have you ever seen a ghost?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Don't we talk about ghosts? I've had lots of... my dad says we didn't, but we did have a poltergeist in our house when we were growing up, and lots of things were moved around, and really actually quite frightening things happened. Yeah. And I woke up and there was a hand, it was my dad's hand because it had his wedding ring on it. He wasn't on the end of this hand. I could see him in bed on the other side. There was lots of us, 9 children. So me and my brother, when we were like 4 or 5, we had a bunk bed in my parents' bedroom. Yeah. So I woke up and saw this hand with his wedding ring on, but like just ended at the wrist. I was like, oh, God. Ah! Turned round and saw my dad lying down asleep. But then another one of my dad came up out of his body.
Right.
And said, oh, don't worry about it or something. And then... and lay back down. Right. And then a horse... A white horse came through the window with a man on it with all like ragged clothes. I was like, hey, up. Because he's quite handsome. And was going, it's all right, I'll get the hand. I went, oh, yeah, if you could, it's down here. And then, then this little girl who had been bothering me for a while was at the end of my bed and had pinched my feet. And I was like, oh, not you as well. So it's like, oh, please make the nice man with the ragged shirt on the white horse get rid of the girl and the hand. And then they did. But my brother, this is the freaky thing.
Yeah.
And this is absolutely true. Honestly, this is true. I never told anybody about that. And that was when I was 4. And then about 7 years ago, we were all... It's a very big part of Irish culture is to tell ghost stories, to sit around telling really scary ghost stories. And my brother went first. And he said, oh, I had one. Do you remember we had bunk beds in Mum and Dad's bed? And I was like, yeah, yeah, what did you see? And he was like, well, I remember waking up, well, sort of thinking, I've got to get rid of the hand. And he thought he got rid of the hand that was
It was you and the man on the horse and the...
And the girl and dad, it was all of them. It was like multiple, it was like teamwork.
Do you think?
But lots of other things as well.
You might have been asleep. That is just one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think they were ghosts. I just think I was, you know, a weird child. No, but lots of other things as well have happened. Quite
go on, tell us
more. Because you can't see what he's doing. He's going like this. I hope a ghost scares you so
hard. I was in Amsterdam.
Yeah, what happened?
And I really don't believe in ghosts.
What happened?
But I was snoring. So there was 2 rooms in this flat. It was a massive flat that we've been put in, but up these creepy stairs.
Oh, I'll tell you another one as well before I go. Yeah.
And I went and slept in this attic room. And then I could hear this weird noise coming from the kitchen below. And there was a window, and I looked down, I couldn't see anything. It was this. I was looking at what's going on. Mm. And then I went down the stairs, and it stopped. And I thought, oh, maybe it's the window, and I shut the window, and I came back upstairs, went to the bedroom. came downstairs, stopped, nothing happening, went back upstairs. And I really thought, there's definitely a ghost now. I'm really sure there's a ghost. And we'd also, earlier in the day, a man had rung the doorbell, said, I'm maintenance, it's flat maintenance. And then he'd rung the doorbell and I'd buzzed him in, and then he hadn't appeared in, and come up to the stairs. And then when we got back to the flat later, our front door was wide open. And we definitely locked it, and someone had come in and done some stuff. The blinds were up and stuff, but nothing.
The man.
Nothing was missing. I presume the maintenance guy had gone into another flat and then come into this flat and then pulled the door and not pulled it shut. Or he was a ghost. So I was already a bit freaked out by the fact that there might be a man. I was more worried about there being a man hiding in my flat waiting to kill me. Than a ghost. And then I went and sat in the kitchen for ages and the noise didn't happen. Then I went upstairs, and the minute I was upstairs, the noise started again. And so I went to sleep, and then I woke up and the noise was happening again. I thought, this is really, and it was a couldn't work out what it was. And then the next day I went down in the kitchen later on. We had a pack of crisps on the counter, and there was a hole in the crisp packet that had been gnawed in by some rodent of some kind, I imagine, or a ghost. And we don't know, do we? So it's, but then how does a mouse know what's in a pack of crisps? Like it was a closed pack of crisps. A mouse doesn't go, oh, I'll take a chance, I'll gnaw through that stuff for 5 hours in the hope there's some delicious crisps inside. That a mouse doesn't do that. So I think it was probably at the very least, a ghost of a mouse who was able to see the contents with some kind of X-ray vision. Or just a ghost, because who says ghosts? It's hard, isn't it, for them to open stuff. We were talking about Patrick Swayze backstage. He couldn't always manipulate stuff unless he was really angry. So that ghost had to gnaw that.
It seems like if you're a ghost,
it's not as good as your story, I'm telling you, but at least it happened this weekend, so I was a bit scared of the ghost.
I don't think, a ghost would go to, I think they've got other things.
What, like appearing to a small girl going, oh, it's your dad's hand. Ooh, I'm the ghost of your dad's hand.
It didn't say anything. It didn't have a sock on it, going like that.
Why would a ghost waste its time bothering you?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a ghost.
What
it was just,
it?
Don't know, my brain just saw a hand.
Go on, what's your other one?
Oh, I did a gig in Taunton.
Oh,
and I went back to the B&B, and it was a really weird B&B, and it had all, like, wooden devils everywhere on the stairs and stuff. Anyway, so they put me in this one room, and I said, oh, I'm really sorry, I don't think I can be in this room. And she said, oh, yes, everyone says that. Come on, then. So she... like, as quickly as that. So she put me into another room, and that was much better. And I sat down. I tell Tony Law this story, and he said, you need to talk about that. But no one ever laughed. Anyway, so I sat down on the bed, and right behind me, like literally right behind my head, I heard this. Oh. I absolutely, like, it was, I thought, was this ghost at my gig? And now it's like, now it's like, oh God, I've just listened to you for 2 hours. And now you've come back to my room. Anyway, it was so loud, and it was so loud as well. It wasn't just like a distant noise. It was sort of right behind my head. So I had to put all the lights and the telly on all night and everything. And then in the morning, I had to walk past all these
devil's heads.
Devil's heads.
That's an odd choice for a bed and breakfast.
I didn't book
it. No, I know, for the people who run it.
Yeah, family run. Yeah, family run. There were lots of other unexplained. It's just science, isn't it? It's not.
I'm not sure it is much.
But it was really loud.
Yeah.
And it was a man's voice, and it did exactly that, right behind my head.
Are you sure?
And I wasn't thinking about people sighing or grunting, so it's not like I...
Wasn't it just someone having sex in the next room and the walls...
It was right behind my head. There was no one else in the B&B, she told me. But it was right behind my head.
Might have been that actual devil. That might be where... Because if I was the devil, I would live in a bed and breakfast with loads of carved effigies of me. I just imagine that's the kind of guy the devil is.
Going around
sighing.
Do you think
sighing? So? Yeah, sitting around and then that's me.
Sighing at female comedians.
It's a low. It's a light for the devil. It's a light thing for him to do out of all the things he could choose to do.
Yeah.
Well, we'll never know. We'll never know the answer. I'm going to have to let you go. I'm really sad to say this because I'd like to make you stay forever.
Thanks.
But
what have you got? Any interesting stuff
there's
later?
Loads of stuff.
No, we've got enough. They've got the mugging
there.
And the ghost thing.
We've got lots of good stuff. We've got, you know, it's a really good book. They should buy the book.
Thanks, Rich.
It's really... Sometimes, you know, I've had guests that have written a book and I read the first pet chapter and it's rubbish.
Who was that? No, we should now go through all the episodes. No.
That was hard work. Not really. Oh, yeah. You pluralised penis as penis.
Yeah, because the copy editor is the woman who goes through the book.
Yeah.
And she said, this is not, it's penises normally.
Yeah.
So correct. A lot of people won't know
She's
what
correct.
That is.
I'm an expert on the penis.
Yeah, no, but I prefer.
Penis.
Yeah.
Okay. Just looks like kind of
just
pasta.
Just looks funnier.
Looks like a pasta.
Why can't I use a word that's not used very often?
And also, you use the word ass instead of arse, which I'm.
They
that
wanted
is the most
to change that
That
as
is
well.
The most offensive thing
no,
I've ever seen.
No, they wanted
seen.
To change it. They said it's not. There's a lot of things in the book actually that are like that.
Yeah.
They're like it's arse.
It's
not
arse.
Well, it might be for you. Who are you?
I'm the world's expert on penises, and that sometimes incorporates
and
asses.
No. See, I don't like. I think ass is a much funnier word to say. In a Gloucester accent,
I think you're right.
Than arse. Arse is like the
say
sort
them
of,
both in a Gloucester
no,
accent.
It's like the
say
word...
them both. Say them both, and we'll see which gets the bigger laugh. And then that will be
right.
this decision. Don't make one funnier than the other one.
What is funnier?
Yeah.
Came out of an unhelpful man's ass.
Not that funny.
No, because you've because they're your lot, right? And they'll do whatever
they
you
won't.
Say.
They don't like me. They don't like me. They want.
No,
they want to see me defeated.
No,
they hate me. They won't
no,
ever tell their friends
they're
about
your
my
lot.
Stuff. They just want to come and enjoy it for themselves, and they won't come see any of all my shows I'm doing. And I'll be sitting there. They'll be like the same ones always sitting there going, "Yep, just us again. Just us, 50 people." We're going to keep you going, so you have to keep doing comedy. You're earning enough money to keep going, but you will never be successful. And you'll have to keep doing this till you die. That's why that's...
You are. Look at all the products you've got. Merchandise.
Oh, no, it's useless.
Language, you know, we can do whatever we like with it.
I know you can.
You know?
I'm just surprised. I would have thought you'd be an
ass. I hate that word. I actually really hate it.
Okay, so
I'm when they said to me, "I think you've made a mistake," I was really angry. I was like, "What?" All the way through the book.
Apart from that, it's good. Apart
but they
from
were
the
really,
tennis and the arse.
Really good. The legal report was so. I wanted to just have a show, which was the legal report, and they said that you can't because it's confidential information. Right.
So did they make you cut some stuff out?
Because
there's quite you get you go it gets close to the bone. You're quite rude about. People and
I'm not. No,
a little bit rude about Sterling Moss and
no,
John
I'm not.
John Inverdale. I mean, like they deserve it, but John Inverdale.
I don't think I am at all.
Okay,
not in any way. I mean,
it's a bit rude to be glad that Sterling Moss fell into a lift, even though it's. I mean, it's funny, but it's.
Well,
it's impolite.
He should have died. You know, we can't let these people get away with saying that we're... It's obviously not... I obviously don't think that, and I make it very clear. I wish he'd been absolutely, completely annihilated by that. No. I'm not really seriously...
I know, but...
Wishing. It's not rude. He sent me an email. He's really pleased that I've said that.
Why didn't you put the email in the book, or is it in later?
It's... Oh, there's some sort of legal thing.
Is there?
Yeah.
No.
But I did print it out for the show and show people. Because he left caps lock on. Which made the whole thing look like a death threat. It did. It was like, I will be keeping an eye on... I will be following your career in... capital letters. It's like, fucking hell. He's not...
Yeah, he's not much of a threat. He can't even get in a lift without... It's very funny. And the John Inverdale thing is brilliant.
He said another thing, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the second thing? Because the thing about him accidentally saying cunt in the middle of a sentence that doesn't have cunt in it was nowhere near.
You're seeing it through rose-cunted glasses. But the mistake that he made, this was live on the radio, the mistake that he made was by immediately apologising. Sorry, I didn't mean rose. I mean, he should have just gone, yes, that's what I said. That's what we're calling it now. Should have really committed to it. Yes, rose-cunted, yes. What's the big deal? That's what you should have done. Never apologise for your mistakes. Well, unless they're really bad ones.
If they're really bad, don't apologise.
No.
Because the apology just looks sarcastic.
Yeah.
If Hitler came and then at the end went, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I did all that stuff. You would go, that's not... Sorry is not enough at the end of that, Adolf Hitler.
Depend how he said... No, he wouldn't, though, would he?
He'd go, I'm really sorry.
No, he'd go, oh, I do apologise. Being really sarcastic. With his hand. Anyway, I'm glad we've ended on Hitler.
Yeah. And rose-cunted glasses. Never apologise for anything. That's what we've ended on, so I will not apologise for anything I've said. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up. Bridget Christie!
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Bridget Christie. The music, as always, is played by Pest. They come in live every week to play this. Very nice for you to do that, guys. Thanks. Got anything to say? Oh, weird. Thanks to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre and Chris Evans, not that one, or that one, or that one, the one from GoFasterStrike.com and his team of crazy misfits, especially George the Soundman, who is looking for work. If you have any sound-based work and you don't expect it to be of high quality, do get in touch with me and I will help you get in touch with him. The producer is Dave Griff. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Go to GoFasterStripe.com, buy a DVD or a book or a badge. GoFasterStripe.com/badges if you want to help us carry on doing these things, or check out our Kickstarter campaign and help us to film more of these. This show has been brought to you by all these fantastic people: Matthew Smith, Ewan Duncan, Rob Applin, Darren Foote, Colin Anderson, Raymond Harpany, Kevin Tipcorn, Steve Mash, Dean Ratland, Gaynor Wilson, Adam Queck, Stuart Fawcett, Tim Turner, Julian Benton, Thomas Baldwin, Lauren Pilkington, Matthew Blackburn, Neil Martin, Jack Burton, Fraser Levy, Gina Lynn, Paul Jeffrey, Rob Ward, Robert Tang Richardson, Leo Vigoda, Carol Forster, Icky Kawa, Colm McGonagall, Aurora Watters, Jake, Heather Henderson, Simon Carl, Christine Sato, David Collier, Jijin John, Roy Owens, Matthew Poynton, and Jen Comfort, Seb Philpott, that's not a real name, Wayne Bolt, Tommy Parker, Rob Swords, these are comedy names, Mark Bowers, David Fowles, James Parkin, Gary Pirrey, and Stu Cavani. So thanks to them and everyone else who contributed to last time's Kickstarter campaign. Help us with the next one if you can, kickstarter.com, RHLSTP. Thanks, see you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.